Okay, we're joined on the programme now by George Vial. Good morning, George. Thank you so much for chatting to us today.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing?
It's good to speak to you. And I'm speaking to you. Where are you at the moment?
I'm in Kansas City, Missouri,
home of the Chiefs. Home of the Chiefs, right? You sound like you've been fully nationalised now then, so. But it's a long way from the Chiefs that you were rare, George.
Yeah, it was worse than Catherine's, I was heard.
You still haven't lost the twang anyway. And the reason we're speaking to you is we came across a news feature of an incident in which you became involved in, which I thought was really quite amazing. So tell us what happened and when and where, George.
Yeah, so I'd actually just flown back to Kansas City from Killybegs on Thursday. We were down at Union Station, which is like the huge, big, massive limestone marble building. And they had this big Chiefs experience for the Super Bowl coming up, kind of like a fan zone. And we were down walking through it. And just as we passed the big Chiefs sign, we heard this massive thud. And I thought it was some kid falling off the Chiefs sign. You know, they were like told not to play on it, but they do. So I was expecting to turn around and see a kid. Instead, I turn around and see a security officer on the ground wrestling with a guy. And other bystanders jumped in. There's a gun. There's all kinds of stuff going on. And at first, you know, we're there with Steph, my partner, and her kids. And so at first, I just kind of stand back like the others. But it becomes quite clear that the officer's not in control. So I just threw my jacket off and went over and got stuck in. I kind of made sure there was no other gun. I kind of looked at that first, saw the gun on the ground. And then when I saw the officer kept getting up kicks, I kind of took the guy's legs and controlled from there. And that helped the officer get a little more control. And
at that point, George, it was clear, I think, wasn't it, that the perp effectively knew how to handle himself. He was getting the upper hand on the officer.
Oh yeah, he looked like he knew like MMA or jiu-jitsu. Like he had what we call ground control, and the officer had already got about maybe three or four good shots in the face. His lip was bleeding. He ended up having a concussion and having to get stitches. And so when I went for his legs, you know, he went for an upkick on me and I could feel the power in that guy's leg. Yeah. I was like, whoa.
What have I got myself into? What do you think is, what was your sense of his motivation? Do you believe he was going to get control of that gun or seeking to?
It's the only reason he went for the gun. It was just a big area full of families and kids. And what his end motivation is, we won't know. But, you know, when you wrestle a security officer and you go for his gun, you've got something in mind. And, you know, I didn't have time to think of it at that stage. And I wasn't even thinking about the gun. It was more just, you know, this has to end now. It just can't go any longer. You're already gone for like 20 seconds.
Yeah. And in a strange way, because this sort of cross water inter-country situation, you actually were you had the confidence to act as you did because you were doing self-defense classes in a gym in Donegal Town.
So I joke with my buddy I had the confidence because we grew up, you know, going out in Donegal, but recently I went to Brian Gorman's got a gym in Donegal Town. It's Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and I our friend's kid Jamie, he's pretty high level at the gym, and we were going to support him. So I'd taken a month of the intro to jiu-jitsu with Brian, and it was amazing, you know, and it lets you recognize those things. And as an MMA and jiu-jitsu fan, seeing like the control the guy had, other people might think, oh, he's on his back, that's okay. It's like, no, this guy wants to be on his back. That's where he's strongest. So yeah, Brian's teaching definitely helped there.
Very good. And I suppose in the heat of the moment, you acted and you reacted and you did so well. It's after the fact when you reflect and you don't know if he might have got his hand to that gun in that moment, or if the gun had, you know, been wrestling for it and it had have gone off. Sometimes it's after the fact that you think, wow, that could have turned out somewhat differently. I don't know. It depends on your character too, George, the type of person you are like. But have you had moments where you thought, wow, that could have turned out really quite different, but I've no regrets?
Yeah, like I've definitely thought, Like, if I hadn't been as close as I was and the other guy wasn't as close, you know, the next 50 yards was all just kids and families. And if we hadn't got to that gun, what would the guy have done? So I have no regrets. I'm glad. Like, if anything, I wish I'd jumped over the sign sooner. But, you know, you just had to go in and...
Yeah, I think you've certainly saved the cop's life anyway, because, you know, if you are of the type that are wrestling with a police officer and you're looking to get their gun, it's probably not to run off with it either. Do you know what I mean? So I think you certainly have saved him further injury or death. And of course, then in this day and age, everything's videoed. So there was a few people whilst you were there wrestling, and other people thinking, right, what can I do right now? I'll get my phone out. Such is the society we live in. But then, of course, some of the networks or picked up the footage then, and you've become a bit of a household name. I did say a bit of now. I'm not trying to overemphasize anything here.
Yeah, and I know the Kansas City community really well. I'm a big part of the Irish community in here. I'd gone to college in Kansas City, and after college, I'd lived and worked here. So it's been kind of a fun reunion, because I moved back to Killybegs last June, and so it was a nice little homecoming back to Kansas City. I've had all kinds of people call and text me and be like, "Oh, you're like Batman." I said, "Yeah,
just not quite as discreet." And I'm not sure if you have a bat cave in Killybegs, but I can see where they're coming from. So are you splitting your life between both places now, George? You've moved back, but I mean, you're over there for the... I was disgusted that Rihanna's concert was interrupted by a game of football, but anyway, we'll not argue over that. I joke. So is your life in Killybegs now in Kansas a mixture of the two?
Yeah, so our family, we have a family business in Dunkaneely, a little town just outside.
We've literally just been speaking to the Donegal... it's a funny how things go. We've literally just been speaking to the Dunkaneely Community Limited chairperson. It's funny how it works anyway. Sorry.
All right.
Yeah, but by pure coincidence.
It's a good wee town. Dunkaneely's got a lot of big potential and plans for the future. So I've moved back full time now, but because I lived in Kansas City so long, like I definitely will be coming back here a lot, and you know, a lot of dear friends over the years live here, so I'll be dragging them over to Donegal. I'll be Donegal tourism promoting.
That's it.
Them.
But you're drawn every which way, aren't you? It's tough. And we were, as I say, by coincidence again, we were speaking to the former mayor of Islington in London. We were talking about migration and about how once you're in a certain place so long, your heart's drawn back to where you came from, and in your case, Killybegs and the surrounding areas. But then once you're there in Kansas City here, you've made these other connections. It's an emotional tear, I'd imagine, no matter where you are.
Oh yeah, definitely. I still feel like an outsider around the Killybegs area. I'm getting integrated, and I'm working on the accent every day. They were making fun of me when I moved back first.
But oh, it won't be listening. That twang won't be long knocked out of you once you're home on a more long-term basis. No one will stand for it, George. Who do you think you are? And come here. I mean, obviously, and ignore the question if it was for personal reasons that you don't wish to divulge, but is there an obvious public reason as to why you thought now's the time to sort of head back to Killybegs?
I've just been close to family. Like, you know, been over there a lot, and I've always came back to Donegal a lot over the years, so I never stayed too far away.
Yeah.
And, you know, our family business is over 40 years in Dunkaneely, and it's just an awesome opportunity to go back and use all the skills that I learned working with big companies in America, take those back to Ireland, and hopefully take our family business into the next generation.
And which is the business of yours, George? Do you mind me asking?
So we're Sea Fish and Sea Bio. So brilliant. We're on Sea Fish. We do cat and dog food industry byproducts. And then with Sea Bio, we do seaweed byproducts for fertilizer.
Yeah. And they're growing industries, aren't they? I mean, they're huge already, but there's huge potential there as well. And for the cat and dog food, what fish is used for that at the moment, or where's the options going forward? Because, I mean, obviously, and we've talked about it in this program before, not everything's fit for human consumption or not attractive to transport long distances. So what's the source material for the cat and dog foods?
We use a lot of salmon.
Yeah.
We use a lot of whitefish, and then pelagic when it's available. And, you know, we get a little bit locally, but we actually have a pickup service, and we have five lorries that go around the country. So we collect everything from up in the north and Fannad all the way down to the south and Kerry and Cork, head out of Kilkearen and Galway, and then we get out of Dublin as well. And then even Goatsbridge, the trout farm way down the country. It's a full-time job collecting.
All right, great stuff, and supporting the local community and jobs and what have you. It's great to see. All right, George, when are you back again?
I'll be back Saturday, leave here Saturday, fly in Sunday morning, lose a day.
Well, safe journey home. And we appreciate you speaking to us. Thank you so much indeed. All right, that is George Vile from Killybegs, living in America, back to Killybegs, but over in America, I think, for the Super Bowl, supporting the Chiefs and Have a Go Hero, I think they used to be called. I'm sure they are still. He saw a man wrestling with a police officer, wrestling for his gun. He intervened, and I think the video is actually on George Vile's own Facebook page of the news report of it. Certainly I would suggest it's a security officer, actually, in fact, certainly saved him harm or serious injury or death. And who's to say if the gun had gotten to the wrong hands, whom else in that local area could have come a cropper? All right, well done, George. Safe journey home, as I mentioned. And thanks for using 086 60 25,000 to stay in touch with us. A caller says, Greg, I happened to be videoing a concert in the Eyneck in Killarney, and a lady asked me to stop as she didn't want to be seen. Well, I just said to her, she need not worry as I wasn't videoing her. Good morning, Greg. In relation to litter, I travelled recently on the road from Kilmacrenan to Milford to Remelton onto Letterkenny. Very littered roadside. Same on the N56 roadsides from Letterkenny to Dunfanaghy and onwards. That comes in from John in Dunfanaghy. It's awful to see it, John. And we've done stories about litter around bins, actually, I think. I certainly did it one or two summers ago in Dunfanaghy itself, which is incredibly popular for very good reason. In the summertime particularly, but all year round now. Can you imagine the price of meat when Ireland's cattle herd is culled? The Green Party is certainly having an impact. As I say, I think we have to be careful not to give everyone else a pass and blame it all on the Green Party, because there is a global agenda that's being, not global agenda, it's happening in every country. Everything that's happening here in this country is happening everywhere else as well. It seems the amount of rubbish still thrown out of cars is unreal. You can see this greatly when out for a walk or run. I often feel like contacting the county council for a picker and a bag, but once I return home, I totally forget about it until I'm back out again. Hi, Greg. You're right about signage. It should help. But why don't the council or Garda put a simple trail cam in these beauty spots? It'll only activate when triggered, so it could sit there for weeks without needed servicing. When they would have footage of potential car registrations and or faces of perpetrators, it's a no-brainer, I think.
Yes, it seems so.
Hi, Greg. Could you have a conversation about the figures out today on threatening behaviour from partners? I'm so shocked about the actual numbers. Me too. We talk about that issue all the time, and we'll certainly return to those figures. We had planned to, but the guest fell through. And it was only towards the end of the programme yesterday, and that's why important you tune in through the whole show, where we were actually talking about the 5 warning signs in a relationship, the 5 red flags, which does also fall under the same. So even as recently as yesterday, we were talking about this stuff. It's very important, and it's something that we are very passionate about on this programme in terms of highlighting. So we will be returning to that very soon. Greg, would Highland Radio get behind the signs? Let's make Donegal beautiful. Indeed, yeah. I'm not sure how, in terms of we can use this programme, I'd be all for it, of course, as you've heard. Right, okay. We want to speak now to Professor Bobby Smith, who's a consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist and clinical professor at the Department of Public Health and Primary Care, Trinity College Dublin. Professor, very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks for being on with us. Okay, we want to talk about cannabis. And I think a lot of people have a very casual attitude towards cannabis. I don't mean cannabis users, but generally in society. And a lot of the time, the way I notice that is if we post a story on this, our website, or you'll see it on others, and it's about cannabis seizure, the reaction is often of humour. You know, people will say, oh, I've liked and shared or whatever. Do you know what I mean? And I can see the humour in that, don't get me wrong. But it's not something you might see if it was a harder drug. Let me put it like that there. And I think that's just one slight sort of indication of the nation's view to cannabis. What's your view? How do you see it from your perspective?
I suppose, Greg, yeah, I think you're right in that perception that there is this growing normalization and acceptance of cannabis use, and this view that it's pretty harmless. And I guess that really worries me as a doctor, because I see the ugly side of cannabis. I see the damage it can do. I see the negative impact it can have on young lives in particular. So I work in adolescent addiction services, mainly based in Dublin, but, you know, cannabis is very much the dominant drug generating demand for our services.
And before we speak about that, can I put it to you, Bobby, like this? I think even often people will instantly compare as an argument cannabis to alcohol. And alcohol is legal, of course. And is this tricky for someone like yourself? Because if we look at what they've done in Canada recently, and I'm sure there's plenty of people in healthcare in this country would like to see the same, whereby the message is not a certain amount of drink is safe to drink, that it is that you are putting yourself at greater risk if you drink. There is no self-limit. But whilst we have this acceptance of alcohol use, is it then always difficult to make the argument as it relates to cannabis, because people will instantly compare and contrast?
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, alcohol is another drug, right? It's one that for historical reasons largely has found itself legalized and regulated, but it causes a staggering amount of harm across society. 1,500 people die every year as a result of their alcohol use. So that's not necessarily a brilliant model to look to replicate in terms of how we might choose to regulate other substances. And my observation of what's happening in Canada and in many states in United States is that use is escalating, harms are escalating. So it's just a way of making a problem worse as opposed to sorting it out.
Yeah, now we can see the problem with cannabis in this county, and particularly amongst young people, because we've got stats and they don't catch it all either. So what is the picture as you see in terms of cannabis use, focusing on our county or nationally, whichever you prefer, Professor?
Yeah, I suppose our group has begun looking at individual counties, you know, because this does seem to be a national issue. There's a tendency to view drug problems as an urban issue, but we know cannabis problems are cropping up everywhere. So we looked at the data for Donegal and found that there's over one person a week seeking out addiction treatment for a cannabis problem in County Donegal over the last 5 years, and that the numbers seeking treatment have doubled over the last 10 years. And that really is reflective of what we're seeing across Ireland. So it's an indication that certainly for some people who use cannabis, and we'd estimate that about maybe 1 in 5 people who use cannabis regularly will develop an addiction upon it. And then some of those will eventually seek out treatment. So it's the tip of the iceberg, I suppose, but an indication of the fact that it is genuinely causing problems for some people. And it's not a drug to have a casual attitude towards.
How does an addiction to cannabis manifest itself? Like, what do you see, or how is it impacting on a person's life? I think it's clearer to maybe understand, and I'm going to make the drink comparison now, you know, of an alcoholic. It's there often, albeit people can be functioning alcoholics. But what do you see in what is a cannabis addiction?
To be honest with you, Greg, it's very much the same as an alcohol addiction. You know, it's with any addiction, I suppose what we're really describing in simple terms is someone has lost control of their relationship with this substance. It's the substance is more in charge of them than they are in charge of it. More and more of their time is spent using the substance, recovering from its effects. Even when they're not using the substance, they're figuring out, you know, when's the next opportunity I can, and that distracts them from participating in work, in education, in relationships, in hobbies and interests. Those external factors or external activities diminish over time, and substance use, whatever the chosen substance is, just escalates. And that's the pattern, I suppose, we're seeing with young people with cannabis problems as well.
And we also know, because of the dive into the statistics here, they're most likely to be male, they're most likely to be living at home, and they're most likely to be unemployed. Now, would that group be inclined to seek out cannabis, or is it the excessive cannabis use is leading that type of to that type of sort of demographic or that lifestyle?
It's possibly a little bit of both. We know that males are a little bit more likely to use cannabis. And then among people who use cannabis, it's the males more than the females who are more likely to run into problems with it. We know that people who smoke a lot of cannabis, as with anyone who's sort of maybe moving towards any addiction issue, it's harder to maintain your place in education or in the workforce, and people are more likely to fall out of it as that sort of substance use escalates and grows.
So what are the harms, the risk factors in cannabis use? Because I think, you know, you and your colleagues want to use opportunities like this to get that message out, because it does have a rosy reputation, I think, amongst the public.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, the group I worry, or the group that we worry most about as doctors, I suppose, are teenagers and young adults. The human brain continues to sort of develop up until really the early mid-20s. And the brain's natural cannabinoid system seems to play part of a role in directing and organizing that brain remodeling process. And the concern is that external cannabis use sort of can derail or hijack that process. And there is evidence now from brain scan research that, you know, people who use a lot of cannabis, their brains end up different. And as a psychiatrist, I suppose one of the big worries is that can then manifest itself in terms of mental health problems, in terms of loss of IQ or some cognitive issues. And probably the massive concern that we have as psychiatrists, doesn't happen terribly often, but when it happens, it's particularly tragic, is where people develop sort of psychotic illnesses, which is the most severe form of mental health problem.
Yeah, and as I said earlier on, this is all not necessarily reflected in these figures either. A lot of problems that might be out there, we probably aren't connecting to cannabis use. So maybe we don't have the full, we've got a good picture, but we don't have the full picture.
Yeah, that's the problem with any sort of data source. It gives you one particular perspective. There's certainly been a lack of conversation, we would feel, about the harms and downsides of cannabis. We know it's not the worst drug in the world, but, you know, and we'd encourage people to avoid using it, particularly young people. But where people do choose to use it, it needs to be treated with respect. You wouldn't sort of start drinking alcohol from first thing in the morning and drink away till nighttime and do that 7 days a week and expect to get away with it. Unfortunately, some young people do smoke cannabis that way, and they seem then surprised at the fact that they end up dependent upon it.
I've said it on this program on numerous occasions, so I'm not just waffling up the top of my head. I just think sometimes we need a bit of joined up thinking in that, say, for instance, we introduce an awful lot of measures as it relates to alcohol misuse. A minimum use, minimum unit pricing, for example. But there's a consequence to everything. And I was just concerned at that time, and I put it to a minister on this program, that inevitably, you know, if you make one drug more expensive or less attainable, people will go to alternatives, or are those that supply alternatives that will see an opening in the market. I would just love us, when we take a certain approach to one drug, that we also are aware that there could be consequences, so that we have sort of, you know, multi-pronged approaches to things.
Yeah, I suppose as a society, we need to just review our relationship with just intoxication generally. As a culture, we have historically certainly tended to celebrate intoxication and view it as an essential part of a weekend, albeit for most of us, we confine it to alcohol. And given the growing menu of substances that are out there, you know, that there has been an increase in cocaine use and cocaine addiction as well, that some young people are choosing to take advantage of that growing menu of intoxicating substances. I suppose we just want people to be more aware of the hazards linked to those substances. And while people seem generally clued into the, you know, the risk that with cocaine, there's a lack of understanding, a lack of respect for the harms that cannabis can cause.
Yeah, and one of the challenges and one of the things you have to counteract, and I'm not saying they're doing it intentionally, but there's a few highly respected, high-profile people that promote cannabis use without any recognition that, you know, excessive use of anything can be really, really harmful, but that's put to the wayside. So really, if you're young and easily influenced, all you are seeing is this person that you might look up to saying, yes, let's legalize cannabis. It's perfectly safe. You know, it's better than booze. That's the only message you're hearing. And it's not really being countered, I don't think. You're doing it today, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, certainly we're trying to counter it, but we're swimming against the tide of big money and influence. You know, there is a global movement to normalize and increase cannabis use. There's people with an awful lot of money who are driving that agenda, including sort of investment firms. The alcohol and tobacco industry have moved in to invest in the emerging cannabis industry in Canada. They're very keen to grow their market in Europe. Many celebrities, certainly in the States and Canada, have endorsed cannabis products and are using their celebrity to push and normalize this. And I suppose as a doctor who deals with addiction issues, I'm just worried that the more we normalize and accept a growing range of substances as integral to regular day-to-day living, the more addiction I'm going to end up seeing, the more young lives I'm going to end up seeing destroyed.
And listen, it's only a couple of days ago we got a couple of messages from desperate parents whose children have easy access to drugs. You know, they can get them anywhere effectively in a rural area, as you quite rightly pointed out. And their personality has changed. You've gone from, you know, being this person, a lovely member of the family and what have you, to start and taking drugs, not hard drugs necessarily either, to be a completely different person, a person that can disappear on a Thursday evening and not return to a Sunday evening, unrecognizable in that family space. That was two people that decided to text us. You know, what, 3-4% of people will contact a radio station in their lifetime. You know, it's not hard to see that this is just the tip of an iceberg out there.
Yeah, and I think that's the case also with the addiction treatment data. We'd reckon that it is actually only one in every 20 people with a problem actually seeks treatment or accesses treatment. And that impact on families is a big part of the story as well, particularly, you know, again, we work with teenagers, so we view families as central to the treatment provision process. And one of the things we've been really struck by for young people addicted to cannabis is the anger and aggression that parents report and experience at home, because it's not something that we tend to associate with cannabis. I'm sure there's people listening who might be in their 40s or 50s who might have smoked a bit of cannabis back when they were in their 20s, and we tended to associate it more with a chill out, calming effect, but that's absolutely not what what parents are describing in terms of their sons and daughters. Cannabis withdrawal seemed to be associated with a huge amount of irritability, short-temperedness, and that can manifest itself in a lot of hostility and anger in the home.
Obviously the debate is ongoing about the legalization of certain drugs, so I'm not going to ask you whether you think they should or not be legalized, but I might phrase it a different way. In terms of the work that you and your colleagues are doing in treatment, would it be easier or more difficult, I wonder, if some of these drugs were at least decriminalized, you know, regularized? Do you think that you would be dealing with more people or less people?
I think we would deal with more people, certainly if they're legalized. Decriminalized is a term that gets thrown around a lot, and I think most people are very confused by what it means. Decriminalized, the classic case of decriminalization that people tend to refer to as Portugal. So drug use is prohibited in Portugal, but if you're caught using it, you won't find yourself in front of a judge or in a court. So in other words, it's a little bit like driving your car without your seatbelt on. You're not allowed to do that in Ireland, but you won't get a criminal conviction if you're caught. You will, though, pay a fine. And that's what decriminalization means. We could look at moving in that direction, I think, in terms of drug use, and I mean all drugs. Look at some alternative sanction rather than sending people into courts, which in truth we actually don't do terribly often anyway. But we could look at an alternative sanction that might actually be more... have less downstream impacts for those who find themselves getting a conviction, but actually it might be more widely used and could in theory be more effective deterrent.
And finally, and I appreciate your time, Professor, you mentioned cocaine use, but our focus for the purpose of this interview was cannabis, but I might just widen out slightly. Are we seeing, or do we have data as it relates to cocaine use? Is cocaine use now more common, as you say, it's not urban, it's right across the board. I know we get a lot of contacts in here to say that cocaine is very, very easily acceptable and a lot of people are using it. Do you believe that to be the case?
Yeah, there's certainly all the data indicates escalation in cocaine use really since the economic recovery. Cocaine seems to be really tightly linked to the amount of money in people's pockets. And people have more money, you tend to get more cocaine use. So in fact, actually in the last year, you might anticipate it could have gone downwards given the pressures we're all under at the moment. But yeah, the data up until 2021 was indicating that cocaine was trending upwards, both in terms of hospital-related presentations and addiction episodes, albeit still behind cannabis as a driver of demand for addiction treatment in places like Donegal in the younger adult age range.
And very, very finally, you know, if we knew everything we knew now about cigarettes, but they weren't legal, would you be debating on the radio whether or not they should be made legal or not? Of course you wouldn't, because we know the terrible impact it can have on people's health and what have you. As a health professional then, do you sometimes think, are they actually really having a conversation about whether or not we should make these drugs, for which we know how harmful they are to both, you know, mental and physical health, that they're actually in 2023 having a debate on whether or not we should make these legal? Is it a bit of a head scratcher for you to use that sort of smoking analogy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, our two legal drugs, smoking and alcohol, cause absolute devastation in terms of the health harms. And we are where we are with both of those substances. And I guess we've made a lot of progress actually with smoking and young people. Although I do worry about the emergence of vaping in the last while, but that's a different conversation. But we've done well in terms of smoking. With alcohol, I think things are moving slowly actually in the right direction, but we can do a lot more. And with regard to drugs, we're in a different space in terms of policy, but we need to move back towards talking about prevention. We definitely need to do more in terms of treatment. Legalization for me is just going to make things worse.
And you mentioned vaping. We've been contacted by parents that have to go into shops to get vapes for their children because they can't live with them otherwise because the addiction is so strong. But as you say, that's a conversation for another day. And I appreciate all your time. Professor Bobby Smith, take care of yourself. Now, Mark Paul is London correspondent for the Irish Times. He joins us on the programme now. Mark, thanks so much for your time this morning. Good day to you.
Good day to you, Greg. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Right. You've been writing recently about amateur detectives descending on the Lancashire village of St. Michael's on Weir, where Nicola Bewley, isn't it? Vanished 2.5 weeks ago. Bully, I think it is, sorry. 2.5 weeks ago. Talk to us about what you're seeing. Well, the case obviously is one that's fascinating the public, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, look, it's a real life a crime mystery. I mean, nobody knows what happened to Nicola Bully. What happened was on Friday, January 27th, she put the dog in the boot of her car and she put her two young daughters in the back seat. And she drove 3 miles to the local school in St. Michael's on Weir, a little village in Lancashire, about a half an hour east of Blackpool, inland from Blackpool. She dropped the kids off at school. She walked over a bridge. She turned right down a little riverside pathway. And phone data puts her near a sort of a riverside bench at about 9:20 in the morning. And she hasn't been seen since. Her phone was found on the bench. The dog's lead was found, or the dog's harness was found halfway down the riverbank. The dog was found agitated on the riverbank, but nobody has seen Nicola Bully since, and the police haven't been able to find any trace of her. And it's turned into this massive mystery that has absolutely gripped Britain and has become a social media sensation, and much to the distress, I think, of people in St. Michael's on Weir. And it's also crossed over the Irish Sea. I mean, there's huge interest in the story in Ireland. So, you know, real detectives are now seen to be sort of vying with amateur detectives and amateur sleuths who have descended upon St. Michael's on Weir to try and solve this case as if it's some sort of a real life Netflix drama.
Yeah, and so I think you're referencing there Don't F With Cats and a few others. I mean, what's their motivation? Obviously, there's a lot of clicks and likes and plays. So how does it manifest itself? Like, what's being seen on the ground, Mark, with the descendant, with these amateur sleuths landing?
Well, I suppose, look, they fall into two categories. I guess in one category is less harmless. You have, I suppose you'd probably call them grief tourists. I was up there all weekend and you had people, families, people with their kids all showing up and kept walking the route that Nicola Bulley walked, going down to the bench where her phone was found, still logged into a Teams call that phone was found. And I think a lot of people found the details of that relatable and they see something in the news and they want to be part of it, they want to see it. The police hadn't cordoned the area off because they're not sure yet if a crime has been committed. They think she might have fallen into the river. The second category is TikTokers. Video sleuths, people making content for social media, coming down and barging into police presentations, harassing locals, breaking into sheds, pulling open the doors of sheds, shining lights into, wondering if Nicola Bulley is being held there. And it's really caused, it's really the village of St. Michael's on Wire, which only has a population of about 400, seems that it feels under siege. So it has turned into this circus, a social media circus, a mainstream media circus too. I mean, look, I was there as a journalist and there were other mainstream journalists there. And you know, I mean, some of the TikTokers might say, well, look, we're just doing the same as you. But at the bottom of this, you still have a family looking for a missing woman and nobody knows where she is and nobody knows if she'll be found, when she'll be found and what happened to her. And it's just this awful, awful situation. For the family and also for the people of St. Michael's on Wire.
And where does it go from here? Because we're going to see more of this. I mean, if it's not out there already, people will think there's something going on here. The legacy media, you know, the terminology that's put out there, are in cahoots with the police or whatever it might be, and they'll feel that they'll expose that, or they'll say, you know, we're citizens, journalists, we're going to have to expose the truth. You know, I mean, we're going to see more and more and more of this going forward. And then I suppose, Mark, when you sort of, you know, come out and call it out, people are going to say, oh, well, you would say that because you're part of it and we're here to expose, you know, yourself, and the conversation goes round in circles. So where does it go from here then, I wonder?
Well, look, it's hard to know. And look, sometimes there's no arguing with social media. And there's no logic to a lot of the stuff that's happening here. I mean, for example, you know, I was on Friday night, I walked out of the local village pub. I was in chatting to the local village pub was called Grapes. And I walked across the car park and two dog handlers emerged from the gloom with Alsatians. And I thought maybe there were police looking for Nicola Bulley. It turns out they were private security guards who have volunteered to protect the village from some of these army of social media sleuths who descended upon the place. So look, I don't know where it'll go from here. But what's happening at the moment is the search is continuing for Nicola Bulley. The police are working on a theory that she fell into the river. Now, look, it does seem, you know, I mean, there's no evidence for that. And her family don't believe that that's what happened. And a lot of people in the village don't believe that that's what's happened. But there's also no evidence for anything else. So the search is continuing. It's on the media and wall-to-wall coverage of this case over here in Britain and on social media, wild theories. And I'm sure all of that will continue until there's some sort of a resolution. And until then, it's become this big media monster that needs to be fed.
Yeah, and of course then those who might ordinarily in the local community are going to get caught up on that, and some will be drawn to one theory or other, and then it just causes it probably end up causing division and what have you. Finally, Mark, what do have the police recognised this as an issue? Have they said anything about the all these you know, probably they probably mean yeah. well, but you know, what are the police saying?
So yeah, some of them mean well, and I think some of them are just there to get eyeballs for social media. The police have told people not to interfere in the investigation, not to engage in wild theories online. And last weekend, when I was up there, they also issued what's called a dispersal order. It gave the police the powers to break up any groups of people who were causing a breach of peace, or, you know, groups of people going around. I mean, for example, there had been people, you know, turning up in locals' back gardens and trying their sheds and looking in their windows and so on. So the police aren't happy about it. I suppose it's difficult for Nicola Bulley's family and her partner Paul Ansell, who has appealed for help to search the land. And that's using his phrase. He wants every inch of it searched, he says. But at the same time, I mean, you know, there has been wild theories online and stuff, and I'm sure he reads that. And what he's trying to do also is protect their two young daughters. So look, it's a very, very difficult situation. It's something that I think a lot of people, you know, has resonance for a lot of people in Ireland. We've had a lot of women disappear into thin air in Ireland over the years. And this is the story in Britain at the moment. And everybody's glued to it.
And a lot of that footage will end up on mainstream you Netflix or Amazon or Disney Plus or whoever decides to make a three-parter out of it, and that feeds it as well, and on we go. All right, listen, Mark, thank you so much for your input. I really appreciate it. Take care of yourself. That's Mark Paul, and I've read, it goes to show my uncertainty over Nicola Bully's surname there. I've read quite an awful lot about this case, but I don't watch TV news, and I hadn't heard her name pronounced, and therein lies why I got mixed up there. I just hope the situation is resolved for the family's sake as well. All right. For any input into that, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts that number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Greg, while you're on the subject, why don't you highlight that a lot of people are taking cocaine as a substance to lose weight? I understand if you don't read it out, as this may not be suitable for your show or listeners. No, it's fine. As we heard from the professor, a lot of people are using cocaine. I'm not sure if it's specifically because there's quite a buzz off it, apparently. I'm not really quite sure it would be used solely for losing weight, because, you know, it'd be like getting drunk to lose weight. It wouldn't really be practical. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, by the way, and, you know, it probably suppresses appetite and all, but, you know, there is a buzz that goes with it, a high that goes with it. So as to be used solely as weight loss, maybe I'm being naive here. I think it might be an excuse, but the reason? All litter wardens should have the following signs where they're working and on their high-vis tops, picking up their dirty habit. Litter, litter, litter. Okay. It's the Garda Síochána's job to be out and about and catch these careless folks. Also, it should be a public service collecting household waste. Look at, I mean, you know, people have wing mirrors and stuff in cars. People wait till there's a gap in the traffic. You know, I don't think really a lot of these people that are chucking stuff out of the cars even do it in front of regular cars. You know, they'll wait till it's quiet and do it. I'm not saying exclusively, but I don't think the guards, even with all the patrols in the world, unless they sit at these spots, are going to stop it. But certainly if they find out who it is, you know, pursue them. But I don't think even more Garda patrols is the solution, with respect. My neighbours do not put out a bin. They burn, burn, burn. Can't open my windows on a good day with the smell. If it was me, their daughter, be knocking on my door about the environment. Okay, so they don't put out a bin, and they can smell the rubbish being burnt all the while. Can I say a massive thank you to the gentleman who helped me yesterday in Letterkenny? I was travelling for an appointment to the hospital, but with the roadworks, the road I usually take was blocked and it left me very confused. He says, here, follow me. And he drove to the hospital in front of me. A massive thank you. Well done, sir. Well done. That's a lovely thing there. That person, obviously, we've been stressed up to high dough, and you helped them out. I be in Derry all the time. I never see children running about in gangs like they are in another area. Okay. Okay, we're going to Ballybuffet, where I understand love is officially in the air. Joy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
How are you? I'm getting on good.
All right, talk to me about himself.
His name is Tommy. I forgot the new name, actually. And we are married 48 years, coming in September. We met in the Butt Hall, Sunday night, and the Butt Hall, Ballybuffet, on the 27th of January, 1974, at a dance. And basically, it's all go from that.
Not too much information, Joy. Go. And did he come over and ask you to dance? Is that how it worked?
He did, yeah. He did, yeah.
And did you have your eye on him, or did he just appear in front of you?
I did. I definitely did.
Wow. And did you know him before the dance?
I did, yeah. I knew him, you know, before that, but I had my eye on him that night, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Definitely had. So he came over and he asked me to dance. That was it. That was a Sunday night. And then we met again then on a Tuesday night. We went to the cinema at that time. And as I say, it's all go since.
And do you remember what song you danced to?
Actually, I can't remember that. I cannot remember that one. I can't. And I can't even remember the band.
48 years, right? Does it feel like 48 years, or does it feel shorter, Joy?
It doesn't feel like 48 years. It only feels like a couple of years ago, really.
Isn't that lovely?
Time just seems to go on. Yeah, we get on very good. He is very good to me. We go away at weekends there. We have a camper. We go in a camper there at the weekends to dog trials.
Oh, wow.
And at times we go in there for a meal, something to eat. So, really, we're always away somewhere, traveling about.
So what is the secret, Joy? Is it spending time with each other, both doing something
that you
enjoy?
Definitely, yeah, spending time together. Definitely spending time together.
And do you think is he a romantic type? Is he going to land with flowers and chocolates, or does he express his adoration for you all year round, Joy, and he doesn't need February 14th?
He expresses it, all year, definitely, all year round. For example, I always takes me down tea to bed every morning. Misses bringing me down tea to bed before I would get up.
Well, if you ever decide to move on, I'll have him. Tea in bed every morning.
No, I get them. I couldn't do without him yet anyway.
It's the little things like that, isn't it? It's not a big thing, but it's a lovely little thing. And it means you get to see each other with him with a cup of tea in his hand. And it's just a wee act of kindness, isn't it?
Yeah, and we can talk. We can talk about anything. We always spend time together and always talk about things and always do.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, Joy, it's been a joy listening to that story of love.
Thank you.
Enjoy the camper van's a lovely thing. And I'll tell you, to go away with someone in a camper van, you have to get on with them because, you know, you do spend quite a bit of time in it.
You do, because the space is small, so you have to get on with them.
Exactly. You wouldn't want to be annoying you. And he doesn't have to travel as far with the tea in the morning either. He just turns around.
No,
and
it's
there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, you're going with your other half to Bida's Corner Bar in Letterkenny for two pizzas and two glasses of house wine whenever you want to. And thanks so much, Joy. And it's lovely to hear such a lovely story.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And thanks to our friends at Century Complex. And you can call Century Complex on 074-912-1976. Joy, what's his name, by the way, whilst you're on? Do you divulge?
Tommy Long.
Tommy, you are the most romantic man in Donegal today because Joy's on saying it and I believe every word comes out of Joy's mouth. Joy, it has been a joy. Take care of yourself and happy Valentine's Day to you and your hubby. Okay. Carol, how are you getting on?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good.
I'm actually out shopping.
Oh, wow. Listen, don't spend too much
shopping on Valentine's Day.
I know, how romantic. Just a few bits, or are you out to get something in particular?
Just a few bits.
Right, okay. So
nothing in particular.
You have a minute to tell me this story and win your prize, Carol.
Okay. I rang your station because I want to give hope to all people out there, especially women in their 50s. I divorced when I was in my early 50s and decided to try online dating. Never had done it before. I was telling Caroline, your researcher, that while scrolling through this particular app with my mum, she was in bed, a woman in her 90s at the time, and she asked me, what's that you're doing? And I said, oh, mommy, this is where you can pick men out of the internet. And she goes, oh, that one there looks nice. And I said, right, sure, we'll pick on him now then. And unfortunately, my mum has passed away recently, but she picked possibly the future love of my life. We're both in our 50s. It's a second time chance, obviously. And we had our first date on the day of the lockdown.
And do I need to buy a hat, Carol? Is there a potential?
You possibly need to buy a hat.
So there is life after
divorce. 3 years later, yes. 3 years later, I've actually started to write a little blog on, I haven't started it yet though, but it's on online dating after you've had your first.
Well, come on with us when you're ready to go and we'll plug that with you. I love the fact that I'm sure your mom contributed so much to your life, but her fingerprints are on this as well, which I think is beautiful.
It is. All right. Yes. Okay. And she said, what do you do with that? And I said, I send this off on the next thing. So 3 years later, we're happily together and carving out a future, so it can happen.
Enjoy the shopping, and we have a lovely bouquet of flowers for you, thanks to our friends at
Alcorn's Florist. Thank you so much.
Take care, Carol.
Oh, that is lovely. Thank you.
Bye. Sounds like he's got a real catch. Thank you. Take care of yourself. That's Carol there. We're going to be a minute late to the news. My apologies. Back with you tomorrow morning at 9.